Welcome to episode 2 of Why Haven't We Heard Of, where we tell you about obscure people and events from history that you haven't heard of and probably wish that you haven't by the end of today. So I'm Katie Spalding and this is James Felton, and he's going to go first today. So he's going to tell us something about Brummy Tigers, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. I just realised I've been saying your name wrong in my head this whole time. Spalding. I've been saying Spalding.
How the hell else can you pronounce it? It's 8 letters long and it's a place.
Yeah, I've never had to say it out loud. Yeah.
It's written on, like, every basketball you've ever seen. How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, I'm not a big basketball guy. It may surprise you.
Well, as a member of the family that invented basketballs, I find that very insulting.
Right. Okay, so I'm here to tell everyone about, a Brummy lion.
Yeah, now you've said it out loud, you realise what it sounds like, huh?
Okay, so here we go. So it's actually about this guy called Frank C. Bostock, who I assume that's how he's pronounced, but maybe I'll find out in a few years after I've got to know him.
Yeah, when we have him as a guest.
So Frank C. Bostock was born in 1866, the son of a travelling circus owner.
That is always a good start to a life story.
Yeah. His father wanted Frank to do, this is weird for a circus owner, but he wanted Frank to do anything but follow him into the family business. You know how parents be like, do not become an accountant, whatever you do, it's so dull. It was like that, but every day I have to see these fucking pandas day in, day out. These fucking pandas gnawing on bamboo. So,
what do you think happens in a zoo? A circus? You're thinking of a zoo.
Yeah.
Circuses are like lions through fire and stuff. Well, they were back in those days.
Yeah, so it's like a travelling menagerie, which is kind of, so it does have the circus stuff, but it also has lots of animals, so it justifies my panda.
Okay, I stand corrected. It's like a circus, an old-timey circus, but more cruel. I got it.
Yeah. So his father, he decides that Frank should be a priest instead and sends him off to preschool. And for a time, like, Frank's happy, thinking he's going to be a priest instead of a panda guy. But then during a vacation from preschool, he works at his father's show during the summer. And he sees this lion tamer being a complete asshole to one of the lions and kind of asks his dad, could I step in and be the animal, the lion tamer instead?
Well, he was like, that looks like fun.
Yeah, he's more, seems like he's trying to be, like, he wants to do it for the lion's sake, but I suspect there is an element of fun, because later on we'll get to it. So he asks his dad, and his dad says no. Then this lion tamer is again being cruel to this lion, and it turns around and gives him a big old mauling. and
well, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. So Frank goes to his dad again and begs him to let him take the lion tamer's place. And again, his father tells him the 19th century equivalent of fuck off. And so he isn't going to be a lion tamer. But then the next day he sneaks into the cage anyway to just kind of give him no choice and just starts taming this lion. There isn't much description of what that involves because this guy, Frank Bostock, is one of the people that pioneers the waving a chair at a lion technique. So, like...
So before that?
Yeah, just like waving arms, I guess, and you got the chair. Also, doesn't really go into how he decided... He wrote this really, really detailed book about all his experiences, but doesn't really go into why his stroke of genius of taking a chair in there came from. It's so, but anyway.
It's like one day he was just like, I bet lions hate chairs.
They always look like they want to sit down and would be taunted by the fact that they can't. So yeah. So he's in there taming this lion and his dad comes around, doing like the checks before he goes to the, before the like zoo, like the performance starts, and sees his child in there and threatens to beat the shit out of him if he ever makes out of the cage alive, telling him, if you ever get out of there alive, my lad, I'll give you the biggest thrashing you ever had in your life.
Okay.
Which isn't like exactly incentivizing getting out there. Anyway. However, when Frank showed quite a knack for not dying in a lion's cage, his father downgraded his thrashing to merely letting the 15-year-old boy getting into a cage with a lion night after night.
Okay.
So he was
arguable about what was the better outcome there.
So he was, yeah, so he's like, his dad saw him in there and decided, yeah, okay, you can stay in this cage with a lion and be the lion tamer with this lion that you might just remember had just mauled a colleague to fucking pieces.
Well, so there was a vacancy.
Yeah. No one's arguing there wasn't a vacancy. But I imagine that's not... Like child services, that's not their number one concern.
This was Victorian times. Child services was just like, are you sure this chimney is large enough to send a 15-year-old up there?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, and they test that with another child.
Yeah. This one's poorer. Send him back.
So, yeah. So, so instead, he just kind of completely abandons becoming a priest now. Like fuck off, God. I'm now a lion tamer.
My only God is lions.
He just writes to preschool saying, I'm not coming back. Dear preschool.
Found lions, not coming back. Currently in a cage, yours, Frank Bostock.
Yeah, so he's loving life, bar for one small problem, which is one of the menagerie's lion. Well, the menagerie's lion is a prick. So, well, I mean, to be fair, you would be as well if you're from Africa and mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some bastard kept waving a chair at me.
Like, well, I wasn't even there. He was just like waving different items at you until he found the chair.
Yeah, see which one pissed me off the most.
In here with a mug. Next time it's a keyboard. Yeah. This man, so he writes in his book that he'd killed one man and wounded several attendants, and he required the most careful watch at all times. Being kind to the lion didn't work. Punishing him didn't work. The only way to keep it from mauling people was to appease it at all times.
I like this lion. Sounds like a toddler.
Yeah, so to attempt any sort of punishment or discipline with him would have been fatal. He was far too dangerous an animal to risk arousing his wild nature, and the only way we could make... was to keep him perfectly quiet, see that he was not irritated in any way, and made as comfortable as possible and happy as possible with good food, a clean house, and another lion for companionship. So yeah, they just spent this whole time just appeasing this lion, and hoping it won't maul them. I just don't imagine that's like a very good show either. Like, just...
I mean, I'd see it. I'd watch it.
You've got to come see this guy say sorry to this lion.
It's like a lion tamer, but like the tamer is like just a soy boy cuck kind of.
Just do whatever you want, lion. Sorry, sorry, sorry.
No. We need lion tamer, like the lion. The tamer is a lion.
So.
My Lionel Hutz business card, like, adding in con.
So they decide to get this lion a lion friend. And they're going to have, like, just to calm it down, which doesn't seem like a very good idea to me either.
Since, no, like, they got famously like not that friendly. I mean, I watched The Lion King and Mufasa and Scar did not get on.
This is years before they would show The Lion King as training to lion tamers. But yeah, so this is the part he sort of glosses over. But he got it a second male lion, which, like, yeah, that's a really bad idea. They don't, like, that doesn't calm them. Yeah. So they get this lion a lion friend, and again to unveil the big new lion in Birmingham for some reason. And
Birmingham's a place. Why not?
So they've got these lions in separate cages and they're going to make them meet in Birmingham for the first time. messages. I forgot to turn those off. I will turn them off now. So they're going to meet in Birmingham and... So they've got this new big cage and they're getting to force both lions into there. The first lion they manage to move in there easily and then they move on to the dick. And they keep trying to get a rope around its neck, but only succeed in kind of pissing off this lion more. And eventually the lion managed to rock the wagon so much it's able to escape. And the lion, which we already know has a taste for human flesh, runs off into Birmingham city centre.
That's probably why they chose Birmingham.
What damage can it do?
No offence anyone from Birmingham, but I've been there.
The worst it's going to do is improvements. And... yeah, because this is okay because I have family ties to Birmingham, as people know. Yeah. What you're doing is a hate crime, but what I'm doing is fine. So even though this is 1866, there's still about 200,000 Brummies living there. And...
Something about the way you phrased that just found it very funny.
Right. So that was just the factual portion.
It's just the way you deliver it, James.
Hilarious demographics. So this lion runs off and scares the crap out of a few ye olde Brummies as he goes. And
heads for an opening in the sewers and goes down into the sewers.
The lion's natural habitat. The sewers.
I think it's kind of scared as well. Like, it's maybe it saw the bull, the Birmingham bull.
You think he was heading in for like nearest Zara?
Cram full of Zaras, Birmingham. So it goes down into the sewers and begins to prowl, and pretty soon the whole city kind of knows. Well, he says, in 20 minutes, every person in Birmingham knew what had happened, and the greatest consternation prevailed everywhere.
Makes sense.
But love how understated they were back then with, like, a fucking lion is on the loose and they're talking about consternation breaking out.
People were mildly concerned.
I have a few quibbles about this fucking lion.
Man-eating lion is on the loose. Susan, tighten your corset.
Frank knows that what a danger the lion is to everyone, and talks about to approach the lion probably meant death. But here's where he becomes quite relatable and decides that, he was worried about that he would be responsible for anyone the lion killed. He was also worried about panicking everyone and causing a riot and, like, making it even more likely that the lion would kill people. And he was also worried about people complaining about his zoo.
On Yelp, like, yeah, there was lots of good animals, but my uncle got it.
Yeah, he was worried about people were beginning to flock towards the menagerie in thousands with anything but complimentary speeches. So now here's where it becomes quite a relatable asshole. So imagine you've fucked up at work, but you have a chance to, like, cover your tracks. Say you've lost an original trial, but you still have a decent copy you might be passed off as the real deal. Would you do it? Well, Frank had a second lion.
Yeah.
So,
I mean...
So Bostock instructs his crew to take the second lion cage and cover it in a big cloth. He then moved the lion cage to one of the openings of the sewers and opened it, hoping that the second lion wouldn't run off into the sewers and double his problems.
What does he think lions are?
You've got to take risks at this point. Double or nothing. So while he's got this lion cage open at the sewers, he goes off into a different entrance and makes a racket with a bunch of fireworks and, like, pretending like he's trying to rally the lion out of the sewers into the cage. They then, at a random point, just slam shut the lion cage and start yelling, "Yeah, we got him!" The most convincing words. And, like, everyone is convinced because someone tells you they've got a lion, they've caught the lion, and they can show you a lion. You generally assume that they've done it and aren't just, like, caught a second decoy lion.
Luckily, there was a decoy lion lying around in Birmingham.
So this whole crowd is really pleased that they've caught this lion that was going to kill everyone. And so he writes, "When we finally reached the front of the exhibition, some of the men in the crowd rushed forward and carried me in victory on their shoulders to the menagerie." Well, the cage containing the bogus lion was restored to its original place in the menagerie. That night, he managed to sell over 40,000 tickets to his show. So the crowd piled into his show to see the hero lion tamer. Well, he absolutely shat it. He was worried that the real lion was going to get out and maul someone, or else roar, and everyone would discover that he'd left the lion loose in the sewers and hadn't said shit all whilst he was being carried around in victory. Like, no one was going to be... no one's going to think it was a coincidence. So, ever the professional who put on his best, I'm not thinking about a lion mauling some kid expression, and continued the show. Then he went to bed.
So he writes, some Godfather shit. He's going to, like, open bed and there's a lion.
That would be a lot more poetic. But, so... he really wants you to feel sympathy for him in this book he wrote. He says, "That was the most anxious night I have ever had. It is scarcely necessary for me to say that that sleep was out of the question."
Well, good. You're lying to catch.
You don't deserve a snooze.
You're not even told, like, the zoo police or I don't know. Who does these things? Maybe even the real police. Who knows?
So, the zoo police and the real police have a nice night's sleep too. And he doesn't tell anyone the next day at all until an actual policeman showed up to thank him for his bravery.
Oh, yeah, about that.
Yeah, it was this point that he broke down and confessed to pretending that a lion that tasted human blood wasn't on the loose, getting hungrier and hungrier as time went on. So, so he confesses to this policeman and, like, explains how worried he was. And for some reason, the police doesn't immediately arrest him, and kind of together they gather 500 armed men, who they station at the sewers exits.
Oh, and I'm starting to feel bad for this lion now.
It's kind of a weird day. Hanging out in a sewer. probably wondering where everyone is at this point.
Usually someone would have waved a chair at me by now.
So everyone's gathered around the exits, and Bostock and a small group of people armed with fireworks again and some guns this time, they go down to the sewers to have their real rescue rather than the pretend one. And using fireworks...
They really love using fireworks, don't they?
I know, it's like... I don't know why scaring the shit out of it is going to improve the situation in any way.
Yeah.
Rather make it lash out. Maybe it was like October, so maybe they just had them.
We just stockpiling for bonfire night. And this came up first.
Tell you what, let's combine these two problems. We ordered too many fireworks.
Also, there's a lion on the loose. Yeah. Some guy just off in the corner, like, counting on his fingers, like, ah.
He goes down there, he's got a dog, and he makes the dog goes off to fight the lion, and the dog comes back with heinous injuries.
I'm amazed he came back at all, to be honest.
Yeah, and Well, I mean, the fireworks must have scared the shit out of the dog too. They aren't, they famously aren't that good with fireworks.
Yeah.
Scared this, scared out this terrified dog to face the terrified lion, comes back half dead. And at this point, Bostock decides to fight the lion for himself.
What?
Taking off my back jack boots, I put them on my hands and arms and going up close to the lion. I was fortunately able to hit him a stinging blow on the nose with one of them.
He punched out a lion?
No, no, he just pissed off the lion. So, fearing that he would split my head open with a blow from one of his huge paws, I told one of my men to take to place over my head a large iron kettle, which he used to carry, which we used to carry the cartridges and other things to the sewer.
I really need this to be made into a movie.
I know, yeah. He's such a bizarre person, and it could easily make a good Coen Brothers film. One of the men, and I don't know why he's invited a fucking klutz, but
I mean, you're half an hour into this story, I think we can guess the guy's just an idiot.
So he's given this klutz a chance, let's say, a really clumsy guy a chance, and now
maybe he was just in it for the comedy.
Well, I'm going to go out a funny death.
Make him laugh.
So this guy comes up with a large kettle, misses the guy's head, and just drops it crashing down to the sewer.
And now the lion's armed as well.
So it makes a noise and racket which echoed and resounded throughout the whole length of the narrow tunnel in the most appalling manner. And the lion, in his words, turned tail like a veritable coward. And by the way, after like not reporting a lion loose in the sewers, I don't think you get to start calling people a cowardy custard.
That's in his lion. He's been terrorizing the city for 2 days. And he runs away and you're like, oh, you coward.
Ooh, look at the little yellow belly.
We wouldn't even scare you with our kettle.
Yeah.
I love this guy.
So it runs off and gets caught in a hole in the sewer. And they're able to drag the lion out of there and, like, secretly put him away back in, like, his lion cage. This time no one praises him because they thought he'd done it the day before. They sort of had to just remember the victory chants. Like, the tone in this book, he seems, like, quite pissed off that no one had, like, carried him.
Yeah, he seems like the kind of guy who would be.
And no one gets killed, and Bostock goes on to continue to run a successful menagerie of his own before being the person to bring back roller skating from America.
What? No, what? No, you can't just...
That was the end of my story. He brought back...
That can't be the end!
It's a happy ending. You brought back roller skating.
So it all worked out in the end.
Yeah. Popularised roller skating.
And lion escapes.
Yeah.
All right, then. I didn't realise roller skating was, like, a Victorian thing.
No, I pictured it a lot later, like 50s or something. But no, it was this dude.
invented waving a chair at lions.
Also,
brought it back.
What was his end game though? Like when he wasn't telling anyone, what was he like imagining would happen?
He like, so, shit, I don't know, I didn't say this earlier, but like he literally had no plan. He was like completely shitting it, not knowing what to do. And that's why he just like went to bed that night, because he had no plan. No.
Fair enough. I mean, I feel like I've been in that situation before, like, not that exact situation with a lion in Birmingham, but like I've definitely fucked up and then been like, well, may as well sleep.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe it'll be fixed in the morning. Who knows?
Yeah, we've all destroyed documents. Yeah, I like to think that I wouldn't cover up a lion taming, but I've never been placed in that situation.
Exactly. You don't know how you'll react until you're in the situation. Mm. It's like all those people who say they'd never be Nazis, but, you know, they would.
Is this a Sieg?
It would be a good one, wouldn't it? A good segue.
Segue. Oh, God.
Yeah. No,
your
it's okay.
And segue.
That's why segues are called segues.
Oof.
Because it's like a pun.
Oof.
Don't worry, I was like embarrassingly old before I realised that the word that I had always said Ori was actually awry. So I would never judge someone for that.
Spend too much time reading.
I know, nerd.
Right. All right, what have you got for me?
Yeah, so as the very good segue might have hinted. So it's called Why Haven't We Heard Of? So I thought that I would talk about a guy called Adolf Hitler. Have you heard of him?
Oh, tell me more about this unknown.
I was worried that you would say yes.
Obscure figure from history.
So, I promised to go less classy this time, and I'm pretty sure I managed it.
Ooh.
So, here's the thing. You've probably heard of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know who he is and what he's famous for. Did you know that also he was a massive junkie who would mainline speedballs and opiates until the veins in his body literally collapsed?
It's sort of a testament to how much of a dickhead he was that never comes up. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You'd have to be...
Okay, so let's go for it. So Hitler has a bit of a reputation these days for the obvious genocides, but also for being like we might call it like a health nut these days, right? People are like, oh yeah, he was a vegetarian, and he didn't drink and he didn't smoke, and that's even more notable, really, when you think about how like this was 1940 and everyone was like off their tits the whole time. Huh?
They ate nothing but meat back then.
They ate nothing but meat. It was like a beef and cigar diet washed down with, I don't know, gin. What were they drinking back there? Sorry, that was a kitten attack. Actually the Nazis were kind of like institutional health freaks as well. Like, there was loads of propaganda everywhere being like healthy and not drinking or smoking, which actually was just there really to distract everyone from the fact that in reality everyone was getting really sick and living less time on account of fascism being a really shit government. And just being, you know, hate is bad for you, as all of those Twitter memes say. But the point is, knowing how much emphasis they placed on being healthy is just, it's important to know, because it's going to make the rest of the story much funnier. So Hitler, he is a genocidal Nazi mass murderer, teetotal vegetarian non-smoker. Fun guy. But if you know anything else about him that's not balls related, it may well be that he had like chronic gut pain and was constantly like farting all over the place.
Oh.
Did you not know that?
Oh,
he was
Hitler.
Like famously farting everywhere all the time really badly. And he was like, yeah, constantly in like abdominal pain. So, you know, at least there's that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Good.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't think you smell nice.
He was in pain all the time. So obviously he and probably a lot of the people that he hung out with wanted a cure for his terrible flatulence.
How do you raise that with Hitler?
Stink. I mean, he was aware. So in the absence of stuff like Buscopan or whatever they use to treat IBS, I'm not a doctor, you know. Disclaimer, if you have stomach cramps, don't listen to a podcast about history. Go to your doctor.
Well, if it's good enough for Hitler.
We're going to find out what was good enough for Hitler. There were plenty of quacks, this being the past. There were plenty of quacks who were willing to sell Hitler, quote-unquote, cures for his digestive issues, which is honestly kind of ballsy, considering who they were scamming at the time and what he could have done to them. And one of these doctors who ends up being called in to treat Hitler's farting problem is a guy called Theodor Morell. He seems to have trained as a gynecologist in the early 1910s.
Transferable.
But after World War One, he moved to Berlin, married a famous actress, and opened a high-end private practice focusing on STIs and skin problems.
Hmm.
So, still naturally.
Still not in the region of...
In 1936, he's introduced to Hitler through Hitler's private photographer, I think. And even though most of the rest of the Nazi high command has clocked him as just like a chancer, which is, yeah, totally fair, as I'm pretty sure you'll agree in about 15 minutes, Hitler thought this guy was a genius. And that's because the first thing he does is he injects Hitler with a concoction of like gut bacteria and vitamins, and Hitler's tummy ache finally goes away for a bit. Okay.
Okay.
So these injections, they basically end up being Hitler's gateway drug to like his eventual like cacophony of cocaine and oxy and meth and barbiturates and something that is quite pleasingly called Dr. Costa's anti-gas pills. Which looks even better written down because anti-gas pills is just one word. So I like that. They were basically a mixture of atropine and strychnine. So basically two different poisons mixed together in one delicious pill. I guess the logic would be like, you're not going to be farting if you're dead. Morell kept a diary of all the stuff he was injecting into Hitler, and it was like 90 or so different things, all in like different mixtures. And we're talking like up to 20 injections every day of just various stuff. Like, this wasn't like a passing sort of dabbling in the drugs. It was like he was fully in the scene.
Jeez. How bad is a tummy ache that you'd be willing to get injected 20 times a day? I suppose he's, no. Right. Yeah, no, it's more about the meth, isn't it?
More about the meth after a bit, I think. Okay, so as I guess you've gathered based on the nature of time being what it is, this all happened in the past where, as we all know, getting sick. I'm good at writing, okay? Stop laughing.
I like that we're like an entry level history podcast that explains what history is.
Various things which were happening and now are no longer happening.
Someone out there listening that, like, now they realise they don't have to warn people about Hitler.
Or Birmingham, for that matter. Yeah, so in the past, getting sick would get you treated with equal parts leeches and cocaine. And that's, like, obviously a popular kind of hyperbole, but genuinely at this point, one of the things you could get at your local chemist without a prescription was a drug called Pervitin, okay? So it was really popular. Like, it would give you, it was marketed like it would give you a confidence boost. It could help you accomplish all of your tasks that you needed to do. They would literally put it in chocolate, and they would say, take three chocolates and housewives, you'll do all of your work, all of your housework. It was like this wonder drug, right? And the reason why we haven't heard of it today is because we tend to know it as meth. Like, just pure meth.
Oh gosh, that's good. Yeah. I would die in this era so
you,
quickly.
You would absolutely die.
Getting so much done.
There's another drug that you can get. I'm not sure whether it was OTC or just like maybe you needed a prescription, I'm not sure. But it was like super oxy. Dead. I think I read while I was researching this, I think I read that like one dose of this Nazi oxycodone was four times a modern dose of oxycodone.
Oof. Oh. You're making me pine for Nazi era Germany here.
Well,
they have it in the
anyone
UK,
wants to
so...
cut that and quote him.
They have it in the UK, so that could go back to a less fash country if they ever get to time travel. Let's hope.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that drug. Other than people probably realised that everyone was turning into Jameses.
Yeah. A bit of background was into morphine for a while.
Bit of background. James is a recovering junkie.
So I got really ill for a while and had a lot of morphine and it was great.
Yeah. I mean, opiates are great. Mm. I have never been long term taking them like you have, but I did break my ankle once and the doctor at A&E clearly couldn't be bothered with my bullshit and just gave me quite a lot, like a big dose of codeine and morphine. Oh, and yeah. And yeah, it was I literally fell asleep on the street outside A&E, so
it doesn't sound like the best doctor there, but
first do no harm in the hospital, but outside no, I was fine. My friends found me.
Put her on the street.
She's not our problem anymore. Yeah. Probably the tequila still in my system helped the falling asleep on the pavement thing. Oh, fun times. Fun times when you're 17.
Should we pause this podcast and sue the hospital for it? None of this is okay. That's not protocol.
You know, the first thing that he did, I came in, my ankle was like swollen to like three times its normal size. It was completely black. And the first thing he does is he pokes me really hard and goes, does that hurt? I was like, yes! You fucking idiot! Yes, that hurts! Nazis. Let's go Nazis. Back to Nazis.
Sorry.
Yeah, so meth, right. Everyone in Nazi Germany was taking meth. A lot of people have, like, real historians have actually made the argument that without meth, you don't even get, like, the expansion of Nazi Germany. So, like, I don't mean, like, without meth, like, the Nazis were innocent or anything. Like, they were monsters. But they were also human, right? Which meant there were some things they can't do. So, for instance, commit horrific acts of murder without flinching, or stay awake for 3 days and nights without sleep while they invaded Belgium and France. So that's what I mean when I say we might not have seen the expansion of Nazi Germany, or at least not how it played out in reality, because the Allies were actually really taken off guard by how the Nazis, they invaded through the Ardennes, which the Allies figured, this is a big old area of forests and hills and mountains, like, we don't have to defend it, because if the Nazis attack this way, they can march for at least, like, at most one day, then they have to sleep, and the mountains will take care of them, then Mother Nature will kill them off. So,
but they must have meth their way on through.
Yeah, what they didn't know was, like, the whole German army was basically tripping balls on meth the whole time. So they literally just, like, marched in without stopping to sleep or eat or whatever. And took over Belgium and France. And to be fair, to the French, the French at this point were at an extra disadvantage, right? Because they were also being given drugs by their high command, but their drug choice was, and I kid you not, a bottle of red wine per soldier per day. Which is A, the most French thing I've ever heard, and B, probably not what you want in your system when you're facing a few million armed tweaking Nazis. So there was even a plan to send Nazis up the Thames to invade London in, like, tiny one-man submarines. So it was like this tight little cramped tin sub that would sail up into London, and the journey would take a few days. Like, even if they left from, like, the Channel Islands, it would take a few days. So the plan was then to give the soldiers, like, this gum, like chewing gum, that contained, like, massive doses of cocaine.
Christ.
But this plan never ended up happening, because they tested this gum on concentration camp prisoners, and it was so horrific that they were like, we're Nazis, but this is too far.
Oof.
Yeah.
Christ. How much meth were they taking that they came up with that plan in the first place?
Yeah, there is
chewable
some
cocaine
don't think
submarine
of.
Guy. We'll get this chewable meth.
What if we filled chewing gum with inhuman amounts of cocaine?
It'll pop up out the subs and go,
pop up in like, I can't even remember, like, I guess Westminster is on the bank. Crop up on the South Bank. Just be like, we are here. Yeah. So, shut up, kitten. You are inconvenient right now. Okay, so all of this is just background to point out that, yeah, the Wehrmacht was all on meth, and Hitler was on meth. That's one of the things that this Dr. Morell would give Hitler. Okay, so I'll go back a bit. Hang on, let me deal with this kitten. Oh, you're cute, but you're in the way. So at first what Morell was giving Hitler was just vitamins, like daily vitamin injections, which, I mean, like I say, I'm not a doctor, but I guess was probably just mostly placebo effect at the start. But at some point in 1941, so people have said, like, 1941 is when it kind of everything changes. And I've read it was round about when the Nazis tried to invade Russia,
right?
Which, as we all know, went super super good for them.
just before he decided to invade.
You know what? I think it may have been
the gigantic superpower.
So Hitler gets sick, and like, I don't know if it's proper sick or it's more like, you know, all my troops are dying in Russia and I can't stop farting and everything sucks kind of sick. But either way, Morel decides vitamins aren't going to cut it, and he gives Hitler an injection of something called Dolatine. So as far as I can tell, this is what we now call pethidine.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Which, as you may know, is the opiate that we give people to help them cope with pain that comes from literally forcing another human being out of your body.
I mean, he is a gynecologist.
He is a gynecologist. It does explain where he would get pethidine from. And he also gives Hitler an injection of animal hormones too. So so there goes claims of vegetarianism as well.
Good. That would be nice next time someone tries to compare me to Hitler for being a vegetarian.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, he was shooting up animal juice.
Actually, he was full of all testosterone. Yeah, this is something about Morel that it turns out he did all of the time. He was just like this big believer in the vague, unspecified benefits of filling people with bull testosterone. I don't know why, and I don't care to know why.
Yeah, I'd be surprised by this, but I've just been reading about a doctor the century before who used to put goat's testicles into people.
I'm not surprised by the fact that you've been reading about that.
You know what I do for fun.
You know what, James? I know you for a while now. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I'll probably tell you about that another time. We'll derail things.
Next week. Yeah, so this is basically the beginning of Hitler being pretty much off his face continually for about 4 years. So, for instance, he wasn't great at waking up in the morning. I can relate. But to counter this, his grogginess, Morel would give him injections of like some mysterious stuff. Like, it came out of just like little gold packets, right? He called it, I can't remember what he called it, but it was like, it was suggestive of vitamins. It was like Vitamix or something like that, right? So Hitler told him to give it to Himmler as well. And Himmler secretly had his private doctor test it in the lab, and it turned out to be, guess what? Meth.
Our old friend meth.
Our old friend meth gets you up in the morning.
I would argue that the last thing senior Nazis need is more hours awake. What is he doing?
Well, no, it's okay, because he had a cure for that. Because obviously, yeah, you take too much meth, you can't sleep. So Morel would give him downers so that he can sleep.
Oh, God, it's that bit in the Simpsons episode where he's balancing out pet pills. And
Hitler was given, like, eye drops that had cocaine and adrenaline in them. He was on, like I said, heavy, heavy doses of oxy. And, yeah, like, a lot of bull testosterone, which is kind of gross. I don't know what they hoped it would do, but Morel did note in his diaries that Hitler wasn't much into sexing his girlfriend, so...
Right.
Maybe the logic there was, like...
I don't think, like
to fuck.
Like, being filled with cow juice for me is a turn-off.
You heard it here.
Don't care if that makes me a prude or boring or unadventurous, but for me, the last thing I want after being filled with cow juice.
Yeah, unless you mean milk, but are you gonna...
Nice big pint of milk. Yeah.
So Hitler was also really into cocaine. He would, like, beg his doctors for more cocaine. He took it to, quote, clear his sinuses, which has extremely similar vibes to all those, like, ads from the 1950s that's like, smoke our cigarettes to help soothe your throat. Hitler wasn't even the only person this guy was injecting, right? He recorded giving Mussolini the same treatments that he was giving Hitler. He gave Eva Braun injections of various stuff. He even gave the president of Czechoslovakia what was probably a dose of meth. So what happened was Germany was like either about to invade or they were invading Czechoslovakia. And basically, I think they weren't sort of necessarily sure that they could flatten Czechoslovakia if it came to it. So they needed to convince the Czechs to, and the Slovaks, I guess, to surrender without a fight. And so what they did was they got the president over, and the president was this really old man who had like a heart condition, and they just like Hitler just screamed at him for hours. And it was like the dead of night, because Hitler was a night person and no one else was. So it like he was already off guard.
Yeah.
And
Hitler's had his wake up juice. Time to talk.
Hopped up on men, screaming at this guy, and this poor old guy, he faints, right? When he wakes up, the first thing he sees is Morel injecting him with meth. So unsurprisingly, he surrenders, which I don't know, it seems like maybe a war crime, I'm not sure.
So many.
Yeah, probably not the worst thing that the Nazis did, I guess.
Put it on the tally. So did he like try and retract it when he wasn't high on meth?
To be honest,
or was he just like, fair play, you got me there.
You got me. So by 1944, Hitler is basically a full-time addict. And then he survives this bomb assassination attempt. So like, you know, the one by Tom Cruise?
Yes. Yeah.
No one. So that's what sets him off taking people.
Yeah. As again, start a history podcast. We go, they're not going to have read books.
Tom Cruise. Ben
Tom Cruise.
He had a strange accent and he tried to kill Hitler. Hitler is he's fights this bomb assassination and he's taking opiates for the pain and cocaine, because I guess he got a blocked nose or something from the explosion. He's just on cocaine as well. So opium and cocaine combined, that's a speedball. And like we're getting to the point where there's quotes from Morel's diary where he's saying like, quote, I cancelled injections today to give the previous puncture holes a chance to heal. Left inside elbow good, right still has red dots, but not pustules where injections were given. So essentially next time you think of Hitler for whatever reason, for historical accuracy, you have to like add in track marks.
Oh, yeah. Picturing him slapping a vein in his groin.
Injecting, you know, in between his toes and stuff. It would obviously be completely wrong to suggest that, like, these drug addictions were what made Hitler so bad or evil. Obviously, for one thing, I've known plenty of drug users over the years, and they've almost all been lovely people who never once did any kind of genocide.
Never once invaded Czechoslovakia.
Never once tricked the president of Czechoslovakia. Hang on. My kittens are trying to gnaw their way into the Dreamies container. I'll be right back. Shame's still time.
This is the... This is the... I can't remember the name of the podcast. I was going to do a little jingle, but I forgot the name of the podcast.
It's all right. We can edit that out in post. Cool. Right. Yeah. Drug users aren't necessarily bad and aren't going to send millions of people to die in Russia or in gas chambers. And also, it's important to remember that Hitler was a terrible, terrible human being for a long, long time before all these drugs came along. Like, the plan to industrially exterminate millions of Jews and everyone else, that was already even in Mein Kampf, so like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to excuse any of that by pointing out that he was on huge doses of meth and cocaine, but what it does help explain is this sort of change in his behavior around 1941 that historians of the Third Reich often point out. So like, he around 1941 he switches from being this charismatic guy who never seems to make a wrong move to basically being just like a klutz in charge of a war machine. Like, he tries to invade Russia, for goodness sake. Like, yeah. All you need to do is look at a map to know why that's a bad idea. Yeah. Like, 1941 is pretty decisively when World War II goes from being like, yeah, the Nazis are unstoppable, to being more like, so which part of Berlin do you guys want then? and there's a lot of reasons why Hitler would become upset and erratic in 1941 that wasn't the fact that he was pumped full of coke and meth. Like, for instance, this is when the USA finally turns up, and obviously he sends a million or so Nazis to go die in Russia, which is embarrassing for him. But on the other hand, maybe he wouldn't have been the kind of guy who made such hilarious goofs if he wasn't completely wasted at the time. Who knows? Yeah. So just to wrap things up, by 1945, things were really bad for Hitler, and not just for the obvious reasons, like being less than a year away from an Allied victory and Berlin being bombed out and defended by a bunch of kids on speed. Actually, it was the fact that Berlin was bombed out, but it was specifically the fact that all the chemists had been bombed.
Oh, God.
So there was no meth.
Oh, God.
There's records of his doctors sending out, like, raiding parties on motorbikes to try and, like, raid all of the chemists and get more meth for Hitler.
Christ. That feels like something I should have known by now, that he was, like, sending out for meth at this point.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually, like, I really did expect you to be like, yeah, I knew this.
I was vaguely aware that he did some kind of drugs, but not in the quantity that, like, he's making it priority when he's about to die to go off and play to the meth factories.
Actually, where I first heard about this was a podcast called Behind the Bastards. And hopefully the host, Robert Evans, won't mind that I've basically stolen his idea. But, he ain't going to listen to this. It's fine. So when I first heard about it, I was like, this is insane. Yeah, this thing of, like, he's about to die and he's sending people out into, like, literally a war zone to just try and scour boots for more meth. For the first time in years, Hitler is being forced to come down from his high And there's stories from the bunker of him like drooling and stabbing himself with tweezers and shaking uncontrollably. So like a lot of people have speculated that he actually had Parkinson's. Mm. And by the end of his life, he was like suffering from Parkinson's because his hands were trembling. And that may well be true. Like he's dead now, who can say? But like potentially it might have basically been the DTs from Speedballs.
Will make you shake a bit.
So a lot of this story comes from a writer called Norman Oler, who wrote a book called Blitzed, which explains why I have not made that pun yet. So it's all about Hitler's drug habits, and he's pretty convinced that all of those symptoms were withdrawal. I should definitely mention that, like, some, like, so actual professional World War II historians, they're like split on his work. Like, some people say it's really good. Some people say, like, he's not exactly, not that he's wrong.
Sorry.
For listeners at home, James is answering the door. Don't tell him I told you this, but it's probably some mess. I hear that Amazon deliver that now on Prime.
Yeah, I got a package and the
yeah, you did.
The man had to take
that comment will make more sense when you edit this. Oh yeah. So professional World War II historians are kind of like split on Oler's work. Like some people say it's really good, and some people say, like, they don't say it's wrong necessarily, but they say like maybe he puts too much emphasis on the drugs and not enough emphasis on the fact that Hitler was a genocidal maniac who hated everyone who wasn't, you know, he hated everyone who wasn't like an Aryan man. I think it's definitely something to keep in mind, like I said it already. But, yeah, the fact that Hitler was a meth head has nothing to do with, like, minimising the atrocities of the Holocaust and the Wehrmacht and everything that he did. Because I don't want to get attacked on Twitter.
Weird, horrible thing.
It's just something that people probably didn't necessarily know. Yes. So I suppose the moral of the story, if there is one, is that this guy, Theodor Morell, was pretty much the best weapon the Allies had against the Nazis, because he was the guy who kept the Führer absolutely wankered and just making just the worst decisions possible for most of the war, not to mention giving him horrible withdrawal symptoms that, you know, may not have been what made him commit suicide, but probably at least made it look like a more attractive option than would otherwise be the case. So, thank you, Theodor Morell, I guess. You may have been a Nazi, but at least you helped fuck up Hitler.
I like it. Yes. That's a good thought for the day.
There's actually, I read someone say that after 1944, the Allies, they stopped coming up with plans to try and assassinate Hitler, because it was like better for them that he wasn't dead and he was just like coked off his face and making terrible decisions. So
like how people were worried about Pence stepping in rather than
exactly.
I did not know about any of that, and I remember the name of our podcast, which is Why Haven't We Heard Of? So that was good. Right. Outro.
Outro.
Yeah.
We will try not to forget to do episode 3.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks' time. Cool. I've been James Felton.
And I've been, and continue to be, Katie Felton.
That's the end of James Felton. Burning identity every time.
Each time we stop recording, the James that you've listened to is killed off. It's like The Prestige, you know?
Katie insists.
I don't like sloppy seconds.
Right. Okay. We'll see you all in a few weeks.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay. Bye.